keeping with the theme of opportunity, and it's titled Innovating for a Circular Economy, and is thanks to our principal sponsor, Sustainability Victoria. We've heard many things about what Sustainability Victoria have funded, contributed to, and facilitated. So this session will bring together some leading experts from academia, industry, and also the government, importantly, to look at redesigning systems, create more value, build resilient circular businesses. So to start this session, Gwyneth Elsom's going to deliver a keynote, and I would like to invite the panelists, Paul Sparks, Jody, as well as Alicia, to come up. I've forgotten somebody. And Julie, who's doing the moderating, please come and take a cozy seat with the couches for our next session.
Hello, everybody. And it's been great to be back here for the second time for me. I was in Melbourne at the conference last year. It's good to see the conversations that they have evolved. As was just mentioned, my name's Gwyneth Elsom. I'm from Sustainability Victoria. Sustainability Victoria is a statutory agency. I should acknowledge country, shouldn't I? And I will also acknowledge country. I also want to mention, so answer some of the questions from last time. So yes, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we meet today, and pay my respects to elders past, present, and future. I want to acknowledge the work and the land that we work, live, and play on, the lands of the world's most sustainable culture, which has been mentioned a few times at this conference, and also acknowledge the invaluable contribution they make to the environment, sustainability, and climate change. And that, again, has been mentioned quite often at this conference. As mentioned last session, yes, Sustainability Victoria is working with Paul and Damien on the country-centred circular economy framework that was presented last year. We are also supporting some yarning circles across Victoria with the Federation of Traditional Owners to evolve that framework, as well as a project testing and piloting it on Kanai Kurnai country as well. So Sustainability Victoria, statutory agency of the government, established in 2005. Under the Sustainability Victoria Act. We have nearly a 20-year history of driving change across energy, waste and climate change, and currently our focus is as a transition broker for the circular economy. Why the circular economy? It's already been mentioned. So 55% of our emissions are from energy use, 45% of our emissions come from material use. And while we see the energy transition is well underway, it's not complete, but is well underway, that circular transition has not so evolved so far, and more needs to be done. So earlier this year, we relaunched our strategic plan for the next 3 years. And the focus, we have three main areas we're focused on, as well as some target materials and sectors. Focus area number one, build a case for circularity in Victoria. We still need to equip government industry with the right data and evidence and outline where the impacts should be made first. It means putting the right insights and research in front of the right audiences so that they can take them up and put them into action. Secondly, we need to bridge the gap between recycling, design and manufacturing, and that's been discussed at this conference as well. Here, our focus is making that collaboration happen. I'm going to use that word, even though some seems to be scared. I think it's such a key word. Matching up ideas with investments, connecting technology to those keen to trial new and more circular approaches so that local markets and investments in Victoria can grow and recycled materials keep flowing through at their highest value. We're also keen to drive the uptake of key circular behaviours in our community. Behaviour change is something that SV has a long history in, and we wish to build participation and help all Victorians understand, identify and take up more opportunities to be more circular and create more visible social norms across our state. A lot of what we do is designed to support Victorian government policy to transition a circular, climate resilient, clean economy and contribute to achieving the government's targets, which are up there on the screen as well. So today I'm just going to talk about two of the very, quite a few number of programs in Circular Economy that Sustainability Victoria runs. The first one I want to talk about is the market acceleration. And we all know that the foundation of a circular economy is a strong demand for those recycled materials, but we're yet to achieve it in all our recovered resources. So this program is over a $30 million package designed to drive demand for recycled materials across the economy by supporting the development of new innovative products, improving market confidence in recycled products and materials, reducing unnecessary regulatory burden and for the reuse of recycled materials, and providing regulatory certainty to support innovation. The package has been jointly delivered by the Department of Energy, Environment, Climate Action, the EPA in Victoria, and us, Sustainability Victoria. And at Sustainability Victoria, we've been focused on the first two of these dot points. And we do this through an R&D and commercialisation support program, underpinned by an active research program that we run to ensure that we remain responsive to the market conditions and emerging opportunities and issues. So I'm just going to give one example of a project that we've supported through this. And that's with our partners at RoboVoyage. SV supported an early stage research into RoboVoyage's concrete void farmer product and then went on to support the development of recycled plastic bed bases. The research was successful and both applications were able to attract additional grant support to support commercialisation activity. Key to RoboVoyage's success from our perspective at SV has been their partnership approach, as well as their strong market engagement and analysis from the early stages of development. Our program aims to pursue real-world market-suitable applications that go beyond the research report, and RoboVoyage has done this really well. The partnership with Australian Bedding Stewardship Council and really exemplifies this approach. And just last week, SV hosted the launch of RoboVoyage's second product, Circular Beds, a product designed to reshape and design an end-of-life management of what is at present a really hard-to-recycle product. And from SV's perspective, this product is a great example of product innovation and circularity. Not only are circular beds made with recycled plastics, creating a promising new end market in what is already a challenging resource stream, but it's also carefully designed to maximise both utility and sustainability and minimise the downstream waste. It's designed for easy assembly, maintenance and reuse, all of which are important enabling factors to ensure we keep materials at their highest value for as long as possible. And importantly, it's locally recyclable at end of life, which is critical for the circular economy transition and also increasingly important for consumers. Finally, what we love about this product is it demonstrates that how research in one area, in this case concrete, can be applied more broadly to other applications, bed bases. The second program I want to talk about today is one that is colloquially referred to as CBIC. So the Centre for the Circular Economy Business Innovation Centre is a hub for circular business model innovation that was established in 2020 and has been supporting capability building, collaboration, there's that word again, and uptake of circular businesses, models and practices in Victoria. We support industry to prevent waste, extend product lifespans and enhance recycling rates further down the supply chain. And over the past 4 years, we've invested to support industry test feasibility and build new business cases and expand circular business models and infrastructure. And some of those businesses are here at this conference. We've invested over $11 million in funding across 56 different circular projects to design out waste and keep the products at their highest values as long as possible. To date, we've helped create over 100 new jobs and developed over 70 new circular products and services in Victoria. We also focus on capability building for several years now and have run looking to build a community of knowledge and sharing and best practice with over 50 capability building events with their training, masterclasses and thought leadership. And we've had over 3,000 attendees at those. We also publish and deliver content, please visit our website, sustainabilityvictoria.gov.au, with over 6,000 subscribers and over 30,000 visits annually. We also offer, and again, please contact if this is interest to you, what we call our investment facilitation service. And here our team can offer free service to help navigate government policy, provide data and information and insights on waste and resource streams, potentially find potential financial or non-financial support for initiatives, for advice on business case development, find suitable sites for projects and navigate approval processes, understanding of regulatory requirements, and look at local end markets as well. Again, to support that, we have an investment portal on our website as well. So one project I'd like to end on in terms of the CBIC program is this example. Again, just like the market accelerations, one of the key ingredients for success has been the role in SV in facilitating collaboration, bringing academia, government and industry together to work on sector challenges and develop solutions. And CBIC has developed an effective model for developing industry roadmaps that create opportunities for industries, academia and government to come together. The example I have here today is with the dairy sector. And through a series of workshops and roundtables, an action plan was being developed to support the dairy industry to go circular. So in 2021, CBIC facilitated the first workshop and brought together key stakeholders in the dairy sector to explore barriers and solutions that existed to create more circular industry. And this resulted in the Dairy Australia applying for funding to develop an action plan for the industry. CBIC also facilitated a second industry workshop with the purpose to review the action plan and provide Dairy Australia, provided by Dairy State Australia, and decide which of those items should be prioritised by the industry. As part of the workshop, participants conducted deep dive into the items and worked out next steps to go forward. We've also supported action plans across toys and textiles. That's all I have today. As I've said, that is only a couple of the programs that Sustainability Victoria runs. And if you have any more interest in that, please reach out to us either through website or the members of the team that are in the room. I'm going to hand over to Julie now, who's going to moderate our panel session.
All right, I'm a huge fan of SV and I fully support Gwyneth's use of the word collaboration because I think that's the genius of what SV does. And so I think, Gwyneth, just use that word loud and proud, shout it out as often as you want. Okay, so I know this is the last session of the day and the last session of 2 days and you're all still here, which is ace, but you're probably also feeling a little bit tired. We're excited though because some of us haven't been on stage yet and so this is our moment to shine. And also, I think we're in a really privileged position being the last speakers because what we say up here, it might just be the one thing that sticks with you from the 2 days. I mean, it might be the thing that wakes you up in the middle of the night tonight as you're like fast asleep dreaming of circularity. And all of a sudden you get this spark of an idea because you go, oh, Alicia said that on stage and that was awesome. Which is ace because this is all part of what innovation is. Innovation is that spark of an idea that leads to something else, that leads to something else, that leads to something else. So bear with us, stay awake, we're pumped, and this is going to be an awesome session and you can sleep after this session. Yay, love the enthusiasm already. So we have three amazing guests here to talk to us about the role that innovation plays in activating a circular economy. We've got Jodie, Paul and Alicia, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves when we ask the first question so it kind of comes out organically. But you can also, as I'm sure everyone is doing, just stalk them on LinkedIn. I'm excited to talk to them because I want to learn about three things. How circular economy can be used as an opportunity to rethink and redesign our relationship with resources. So how it can be a force for good and get us into the space where we aim for so much more than simply just reducing harm. Like, I think we can do so much better than that. I'm also excited because I want to know exactly what innovative approaches we're talking about when it comes to circular economy. Innovative, like this word is bandied around all the time, right? So what does it actually mean when it comes to circular economy? Is it about collaboration? Is it about new business models? Is it about cutting edge technologies? Is it about all of those things? So this is what I'm excited for that they're going to teach us. And thirdly, what can we expect to achieve if we really do apply an innovation mindset to circular economy? Are we going to redesign the way everything is done in the world? Are we going to create more value? Are we going to build resilient businesses? What is it that we can expect to achieve, and how are these three going about doing this? But before I hand to them, I'm going to tell you my own little story about innovation because I get to be the moderator, so you have to listen to me. It involves the three movies Pitch Perfect. If I could, but I think Paul might get a little bit annoyed at me, I would totally love to be playing the soundtrack to Pitch Perfect, one of the songs, many songs, because they're all amazing, right now, which I think would pump all of you up and would really explain what I'm about to talk about. I'm not going to play it, but instead on your travel home on public transport tonight, I implore you to put on the soundtrack and just listen to a couple of the songs from one of the movies. They're all amazing. Does everyone know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about Pitch Perfect? No. Oh my God, you're in for such a treat. So Pitch Perfect is genius, like absolute genius movie. There's three of them. Two's okay. Three's a little bit weird. One's awesome. What it is, it's like a group of women, well, they're girls to begin with, and they're branch out into women, and the group, and they sing together, and they have competitions, and I'm describing it sounds really weird, but it's actually really cool. It's kind of like Glee, where they mash up songs, and so the soundtrack is basically all of these mashups of different songs. Usually there's about three, and they put it all together and make a whole new song, and they do it a cappella, so there's no music behind it. It's all meant to be with their voices. I'd totally forgotten about Pitch Perfect for a while until last week. I was on a road trip with four 17-year-olds in the car to Melbourne. I banned Taylor Swift. Like, Taylor was not an option. I'd had enough of Taylor. They'd banned Double J, which is what I listen to because it's my age group. And so the middle point ended up being, hey, let's put on Pitch Perfect. I mean, okay, sure. Let's put it on. Now, I was half listening to it to begin with because I was actually thinking about this week and what I was going to say today, which was awesome because as I was listening to Pitch Perfect, there's actually a couple of key lessons you can take from Pitch Perfect about how it applies to innovation. When the song starts, you've generally got no idea what's going to happen, like where it's going, what other bits of songs are going to come in. You don't know until you've listened to it the whole time around the first time. So it's a surprise. It's a total surprise. I'm sure the mixers have tried, like they would have tried many different combinations of songs to work out what fits. But I think it's all a bit of a riff. It's a bit of a trial and error. And I think that's exactly what innovation is when you start. You're not quite sure what's going to happen, but you just start. And sometimes, often with Pitch Perfect, the magic happens. They often bring in really old songs, like songs that the 17-year-olds in the car were like, hang on, what's that song? Never heard that before. Whereas I was like fully belting it out. And I think that's awesome. I think bringing in this old with the new is exactly what innovation is, and it's exactly what circular economy is. So think things like repair, like reuse, remake, even like caring for country. Like, to me, these are concepts that we need to embrace new again, and that's exactly what Pitch Perfect does. It has these old songs, but you go, oh my goodness, that's exactly the way music should be sounding right now. And when it is really old songs, the thing I really liked is that the girls in the car, because they all had their phones and headphones, they sat there and said, well, hang on, let's investigate this old song. Who made this old song? What other songs have they sung? And they go on a little bit of a journey going back into what that song is. And again, total genius, right? Absolutely applies to innovation and circular economy. Use that concept. Go deeper. Go, well, maybe that could lead to that. Or maybe you'll discover a whole new genre of music that you didn't know about. And then finally, I love the fun. I think it's experimental, but it's totally all about the fun. And I think we often get super serious. I'm not a very serious person, as you can probably tell. And I think that's really important not to take ourselves too seriously. So Heinz, I don't know whether Heinz is still here. I can't really see anyone. Heinz said to me at lunch before, like, this shouldn't all be about suit jackets. Like, it's totally not about suit jackets. And riffing off what Tanya said in the last session when she spoke about Frozen, like just letting it go. Absolutely. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect from the beginning. You just have to have fun. Let it go. See where it takes you. Go on the journey. Go and watch Pitch Perfect and just totally embrace the craziness, because I think it's ace. So that's all I have to say. I'm now going to pass to the panel. I will have more to say, but I'm going to let the panel talk first. I have a question for each of them. It's all about innovation. So unlocking opportunity through innovation is what we're here to talk about. And I want to ask each of you, what does innovation mean to you and how do you see it being applied in your sector? So Paul, I'll start with you.
I've got to follow that. I guess. Good conference, everybody. I'm out of here. No. Yeah. Hi, I'm Paul, and I am from a company called Didom. And I am the father of Percy and August, and I'm borrowing that from a conference 2 years ago when it was introduced to me, this concept of we are actually borrowing the planet for a little while. And my kids aren't very good at borrowing and lending, but this one they don't have a choice in. And so our company for, you know, you probably don't have a clue what we do and who we are, but I think if every one of you was to follow me outside and we'll go out and have a look at the city skyline, all of those brands on top of those skyscrapers, we're probably responsible for 50, 60% of them. So we work with a lot of major companies around the world, and particularly here in Australia, to, you know, with companies going through brand change, and for companies who are looking at wayfinding for complex spaces and human interaction and so on. When companies go through brand change, they've got a really big problem of waste, because all of those old signs, all of that old material, that's all irrelevant. And the new logos come in and it's got to look shiny and new, and it's got, you know, really impactful stories behind it. But they've just gone and thrown away all this great infrastructure, and that's not really in alignment with their new brand in most cases. They've got these new, you know, ESG targets and so on. So we sort of, you know, I guess I'm a designer originally, an industrial designer, and I kind of resonate with the conference discussion yesterday with Josh and Joanne about, you know, I'm not okay with that. And so we started to apply that to our clients. And so when it comes to the conversation around innovation and as a designer, I think the circular economy really is about then reframing the question in many cases. You know, as a designer, and we're talking about the R ladder, can we actually, you know, be creative, work together, and, you know, make rubbish bins irrelevant? And actually, Yanis put up a slide yesterday which goes through a stack of these great examples about what is innovation or what innovation could unlock. You know, we do not need cars, we need mobility. We do not need light bulbs, we need light. We do not need chairs, we need to sit, et cetera, et cetera. And I think answering those questions is actually not just a product that has to be slotted in, but they are system approaches that need to come in to address that. And then the thinking obviously supports all of that. And, you know, I always go back to a quote, I don't remember where I heard it, but it says, you know, how do you expect to change a system using the same thinking that created the problem in the first place? Yeah, thanks.
Awesome. Thank you, Alicia.
The next.
Yeah.
Again, tough act to follow, but I did see Pitch Perfect randomly just a couple of weeks ago. So I think the algorithm or the zeitgeist is working. It is excellent. And so I totally got where you were going with that, because the mashups are really inspiring. So I get it. Thank you for prepping us up. I think I should try the soundtrack on my next road trip. So that's a great takeaway. I'm Alicia. I'm a hybrid. I've got two parts to most of my answers, so bear with me. I work for Monash Sustainable Development Institute, and my colleagues are hearing me launch Circular Economy Labs yesterday. And my theme song in life is the Chick's Long Way Around. So I'm in my mid to late 40s, and I continue to learn more about researchers, academia, and the purpose of institutions like that in our society. And I think one of the things that I'm interested in about innovation is that really creating new knowledge and being curious about undertaking research is actually the essence of being entrepreneurial, somewhat competitive, but also just really curious and dedicated to finding out what the answers could be. And so for me to be able to work with a bunch of researchers, I think is really fascinating, because I come from entrepreneurial, I come from fashion, textiles, and industry. And so those two blended worlds actually are quite similar. And so for me, it's always encouraging to hear from researchers who talk about learn by doing, somewhat stressful, but, you know, be experimental, take some risks. Obviously, you want to manage your risk, and you're not trying to make business as usual risky, but rather just keep bandwidth for experimentation, play, mashing it up, as you said in Pitch Perfect, and really having clear space and time and a bit of resources to iterate and fail and discover and prototype. And so I think what I've learned from the way that researchers undertake that discovery, and of course, there's lots of different ways that different researchers do that. But over the years, I've just really been inspired and learned a lot from those around me, whether they're working in water or behavior change or economics, supply chain management. You know, everybody has a different way of being curious, innovative, and they're really excited and the passion is really there. And so I really take that to heart in the way that I continue to enjoy the thrill of being creative with them. And of course, applying that to my own industry, which maybe I'll get to next.
Thanks. So I'm Jodie. I am the mum of Chloe, Sophie, and Ben, and stepmum of Siobhan. I'm just going to embarrass the hell out of her, but Sophie's here today. So earlier when I was hearing, where is the child in the room? Where is the young person in the room? I was hugging my 14-year-old, go, yeah, you're here. This is why you're here. So I'm so sorry, Soph. So in terms of environmental burden and negative impacts, I've, you know, spent all of my carbon budget on my family many times over by having that many kids. But in terms of potential innovative solutions for the future, I hope I've invested wisely. I work for a big engineering company called Oricon, and I've been with them for 2.5 years, kind of quite a similar role to Tanya at Becker, actually, in terms of providing solutions and supporting companies in circular economy, but also trying to transform my own big behemoth at the same time. So many different caps at all times. And I had the immense pleasure of being on the CBIC board as well. So I've had a lot of involvement in that project. I'm also on the CRC advisory committee. So in terms of getting to play with innovation, that's really, really fun because I get to look at all the CRC programs, CRC projects and CRC bids that come in and ask lots and lots and lots of questions about circular economy and send feedback back going, have you thought about the next life cycle of this? What does your LCA look like? Which is a great thing to be able to do. I've been banging the circular drum, see what I did there, for many years now, and it's so great to be back in a room with circular folk. So what does innovation look like to me? I think innovation is being quite uncomfortable, in an uncomfortable zone, but when it's working well, having fun at the same time. And I think if you are working in circular economy, you can't not be innovating, because if you're working in circular economy, you're trying to work in messy, complex systems where solutions are not apparent. They're not pre-written. You've got to work with a lot of different organisations and people and get across what other people are working on. You've also got to work in so many different time frames. So you've got to be thinking about like CapEx and what you can spend money on now and then right through the life cycle of what you're working with, but then also thinking about subsequent life cycles. So if that's not innovating, I don't know what it is.
I'm going to stick with you for a minute. How do we get more businesses to identify opportunities for innovation? Like, is it easy for them to see where those opportunities are? Is it like a magic switch or a magic pill that you've got to get them to take to go, hey, there's innovation?
The matrix pill. I don't think there's a kind of easy answer to this. When I'm trying to get businesses and organizations to innovate, there's a couple of things I do. I try to get that shared understanding of circular economy, the different pillars, that systems thinking, the notion of life cycle assessment and trade-offs and things like that. And often when people get across that for the first time or second or third, you can see them switching on, right? They see how things behave differently. Like the questions you were just asking, seeing a car as a mobility system, you see them go, whoa, my mind just blew. So trying to get them across that point of taking the pill, I guess, getting them to understand where they already sit in the system and the superpowers they have and what they might have been doing that's a bit circular already. So they kind of build confidence. So trying to get them nice and in a psychologically safe zone, and then you start smacking them around once they feel psychologically safe, and you make them talk to other people that they've never talked to before, and you make them question things enormously and work with material science and work with behavioral specialists and things like that. So I quite like riding that roller coaster of safe, uncomfortable, safe, uncomfortable.
Okay, so Paul, then, what about if you've got businesses that are already super successful in what they're doing and they're totally fine, like you don't need to rock the boat, like it's business as usual is what they want to keep doing, because why can't they just keep doing it? What are some tactics or what are some tools that you can use to say, Yeah, but come on, like it's really not good enough. Like business as usual isn't going to cut it. How do you have that conversation?
Yeah, look, I'm really excited because there are a lot of great businesses doing it. And, you know, obviously lots of companies in the room today. But I think one of the things we've also got to understand is, you know, I look at our supply chain. None of those businesses are here today. And they're all sort of, you know, I think it was said a little earlier, they're all, you know, sort of working and, you know, living month to month. They've got their own pressures. They've got their own problems inside their own business. They have been driven for 15, 20 years on cost to drive, you know, to race to the bottom on their projects and so on. And, you know, ultimately we've got to recognize where they are in their position first. And often they are really well valued. You know, I'll change that. Actually, they are companies with really great values and they've got a really good, you know, business model and they are successful. So what is their impetus to change? You know, they don't have a carrot because they're not getting a demand from clients and they don't have a stick because they don't have regulation. So one thing we've found is actually the most important thing is actually education and support. And that can be done as simply as just having some really great case studies. You know, I think all of us here in the, you know, in the room can probably tell a good story. You know, we've heard thousands of them this last 2 days of really great circular stories about projects that have got, you know, that they sort of break down that stigma of being expensive or disruptive or having a, you know, the disruption to business as usual, in the sense that, you know, that material may not work for that reason, but let's try it. Let's fail quickly. Let's, you know, be comfortable with feeling uncomfortable for a little bit. Pilots as well, I think, is something that we've tried to do quite a lot at Diadem. So I've actually brought my own Sophie along here today. Sorry. Sophie's from CBA, and we've had this incredible relationship where for the last 4 years we've been able to trial so many different things in our business through our supply chain and actually see that through our supply chain, such as reducing embodied carbon in the signage, you know, look at reuse of signage instead of chucking it out, modular design for retail, we've looked at circular solutions, we've looked at asset management. All of these sorts of things we're sort of trialing, and at the same time, actually, you know, it's not something that Diadem does all itself. We've got to have a supply chain to do all of this. So we've got to take them on that journey and we've got to actually show them the various positives of doing it as much as everything else. Yeah.
Alicia, I'd be interested in your perspective on this question too, because I know you've done a lot of really great work with fashion and textiles. How do you start to have this conversation with them? Like, I think especially now we're seeing fashion brands saying, well, we've just got to sell stuff. We really need to just keep selling at the moment because things are not great. How do you get them to think in a different way and say, well, things could be a whole lot better if you actually looked at different things?
Julie, you're dropping a new question on me. That's okay. I'm going to totally riff that idea with what I've already prepared for the other question, because you gave me an assignment that was pretty intimidating because it talked about measuring positive impact. I mean, measuring, let's talk about that. I usually hand that to the researchers, which I did do, and I'll come back to that, but also impact. And my whole response actually brings it back to sales.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll take the long way around. And I will tell you guys that I asked my brain trust, you know, what do you think about this question? Because I do think it's important that we measure positive impact. And, you know, circular economy really requires innovative ways of measuring because we're starting to measure different things and ask ourselves what's important. I think your original question asked to go beyond reducing waste and emissions. And I think we're getting okay at measuring that. And we're, you know, thankful to, we heard about a lot of it in the last 2 days. We've got really good material measurements happening, material flows through CSIRO, which is excellent. And we were able to really isolate and take a look at things. We do need to understand more about emissions. And I think that there's lots of work that has been done. McKinsey's done reports. EMF has done reports. We can take a look at, you know, what does ABS measure when it comes to our waste per capita. But at the end of the day, what I really think is important to measure is utilization? And there's also, which materials are we measuring? Are we measuring virgin or non-virgin? And how much do we want to focus on that? So to answer your question, the new one, I think utilization is really interesting. I love to look at product life extension, and I particularly love to see that in clothing. I cut my teeth in retail and in entrepreneurial environments, really understanding what people wanted to put on their bodies and what they loved about clothing. But we actually were a consignment boutique. So the whole idea was to resell and get excited about the same thing, to have a profitable business, which was bespoke and, you know, a single owner. And we had to basically enjoy clothing enough that we would take it back in from the person who bought it from us and resell it again to the next person. And some of the best clients we had would absolutely come in for a styling session and a full outfit, and then they would wash and dry clean or press their clothing, and then it'd be back in another week later. And when you think about the profitability of increasing utilization, there is so much opportunity there to get excited about the products that we already have made. And I think, to your point, brands and businesses know the most about their products, right? We become experts in where it was made, what it was made from, you know, passionate about the design of it. And so I think if we can actually capture that love and affection in the design process with the profitability and the measuring of sales of how often you can get that product to be sold, resold, re-enjoyed, I think that's a really interesting opportunity, both from a profitable perspective and also from a measuring what circularity really means. And so I look forward to somebody working that out, maybe in research or in business. But I think that's where we have more opportunity. And I think the last part of your riff question, which I'll end on, is, you know, I think when I talk to brands, they are so passionate about making their products circular. And so I think really understanding how we can guide them with that, but at the same time, they have a lot of ideas. And so it's really about marrying up, I think, the expertise and the knowledge on both sides to be able to innovate, you know, what's possible.
Awesome. Thanks. That was okay. Thanks for going with my riff. Jody, I want to ask you too, though, because you've got heaps of examples here. How do you have these conversations when businesses say to you, I may be your own business saying, but what we're doing is fine? Like, how do you just broach that and come on?
I find code.
Actually, hang on a sec, just before you answer. My iPad has gone to sleep, which is not a great sign. So I'm not sure if someone could come and help get the iPad running, because if people could start putting in questions, or if you're already putting them in, thank you. That would be awesome. Because we'll go to questions next. So put your questions in. So Jody.
Yeah. So I found COVID really helped, because doing training and trying to engage on why status quos are necessarily going to be the same all the time pre-COVID was really hard. Like, literally training people on supply chains and talking about materials that might not be available in the future. It was whatever. And then from one day to the next, boom, every supply chain broke. You couldn't get what you wanted to get. So that's been such a gift, to talk about discomfort and change, and that what works every day might just not work all the time. And I think while, you know, we quickly went back to our old ways, we get it, because it's a lived experience. So businesses know that status quo can be shifted very dramatically, very quickly now. So talking to them about, yeah, that's great, that's working now. Is it going to work in 10 years? Is it going to work in 20 years? Where do you want to be there? Are you going to be able to continue to get these products? Your supply chain's changing because they need to be reporting all this carbon stuff, and they're shifting with their ESG. So going, yes, that's absolutely working now and you're doing a great job. Is it enough to keep up? I think that's really helped, just that COVID switch in terms of pushing it. Also the case studies like you speak of, there are so many now, and the number of pilots are just wild that are out there. I find what's really hard is the getting them to scale and getting them to really be at scale. So the Robo Void is a great example, and it's really fun now that I'm in Oricon that I can push for that to get in all our projects, right? So from the CBIC perspective, it was like, yay, let's support this thing, let's get that on the market. And now I get to nag the project designers and go, have you considered this? Have you put that on your project? And it works. And once they use it once, they love it. So that kind of scaling up, and we do have some really great case studies here, really helps imagine what could be next as well. And also putting them in the room with the different parts of the value chain that they're going to need to adapt for as well. So getting them in the room with their clients or, you know, their neighborhood people and things like that, and seeing things from another perspective, and not making them feel like a bit shit that they're a bit linear right now as well, right? Where do you want to be tomorrow?
You're half answering one question here about getting past the dopamine hit of invention and progressing great ideas and pilots to business as usual. So like, I like how you were talking about, well, because you know that great idea exists, you can then go in and sell it to your business.
I like your dopamine hit.
It's not my question.
Thing as well.
Hayley, great work. I think that's a really good point though, right? It was like a dopamine hit.
Yeah. I've got a story for that though, because I was interviewing someone in Finland for an SV training session a couple of years ago, and they'd done this amazing, you're going to like this, they'd done this amazing work for circular procurement in their super duper Finnish local government. So we always look to Europe, you know, everything's really easy there, you know, they've got this amazing government context, blah, blah, blah. And they were like light years in front of us. So I'm like, okay, that's really good. And she was saying how at the beginning it was very much pilots and the circular economy people had to drive it, but she's really excited because at last the procurement people are doing it without them. So at last they're standalone. I just stopped for a second and was like, oh, okay. So how many times do you think it took to get it to the point where they're doing them by themselves? Because I get frustrated after one time, two times. It's like, why are you not doing this, you stupid person? She was like, oh, maybe 13. And she sounded really happy about it. I thought, oh my God, we are not persistent enough. Like, we just expect people to pick this up. But actually, we've just got to do it like again and again and again. It's quite boring. So I think we've got to get past the dopamine hit as well and just say the same thing again and not get frustrated with it.
Let it go.
Right?
Let it go.
Banned Frozen from my house.
Okay. Alicia, there's a comment here. It's not so much a question. Alicia, you are my new spirit animal.
Okay.
Thought everyone needed to know that. That's awesome. We love that.
I actually think that's cultural appropriation. We might want to reflect on that one and just like dial it down.
Okay. So
it happens in fashion all the time and we have to call it out. So,
For Paul, what is the reaction from big brands when talking about circularity concepts?
It's actually getting better. Yeah. I think that, you know, they've obviously got it on their mind and they don't know how to start. They know when to start. Generally it's now,
yeah.
But they don't know how to start. And so it's actually a really receptive audience. And so obviously if we can take them on the journey and actually break it down into some very simplified sort of techniques, I suppose. And that is that they have to understand that what they're asking us to do is to design a system that is going to be built by a certain supply chain. It's going to be put on buildings and then we're going to walk away and the circularity is actually now over to you. You know, in many ways, when it comes to what we do, we're not involved, you know, for the life cycle. So how is that then going to be managed? And so, you know, we talk to them through the process of asset management and, you know, facilities management designed for disassembly, end of life and these sorts of things. And that sort of then starts to build a brief, which is really great because we sort of started that process. And, you know, some of the questions we have posed to brands are, what are you going to do with all this material when you don't need it anymore? And so we start to project their mind to that and then say, what are the various scenarios that things might come to the end of life? And then we start to say, well, how are you going to extend the life? And then what are the interventions we put into it now in terms of the design stage to make sure that that is enabled? Yeah. And it's very receptive. Yep.
Awesome. Okay. I'm going to ask one last question. This timer is telling me 16 minutes, but I feel this is telling me not 16 minutes. So I might look to Paul, we're wrapping up around 5. Am I passing? Yeah. So we might have time for 2 more questions. This one, I'm actually going to bring Gwyneth back in and get everyone to answer. So examples of government and industry encouraging and incentivizing the testing and piloting of innovations. I think this is exactly what...
Love this question.
Yeah. And I think this is exactly what SV is all about, like incentivizing this and being the broker, I guess.
Yes. So SV has been on a journey over about 4 years now. And a number of our programs are set up as grant infrastructure, grant type delivery. So we do grants, and we have in the past, but I guess one of our key learnings is that grants is not always the way to do it. It's not always the way to incentivize. And I think as we evolve our work, we're looking to different ways to target different audiences with different types of incentives. And whether it's through challenge work, it's different if you're working with SMEs versus large corporates. Large corporates, it can be about seeding or supporting someone in the ecosystem of that large corporate to get an idea through. But once it's through, the larger corporates can have the resources to take it on. It's different if it's an entrepreneur or an SME. And so I think as we sort of evolve how we think about different ways to incentivize. And the other thing I would say is it's not always about the money. And that's the kind of one of the key things for SV in terms of being the transition broker. The connections we can make across sectors, across industry and government to support that in a non-financial sense is so key, particularly where circularity is at the moment. And it's about providing that support and being able to make those connections, getting the right people in the room. And simple things like several of our programs run speed dating nights, essentially. And they're really popular because you're getting to talk to other people who have gone through the same experience and ask them the questions about your idea and how to progress it as well. So it's a whole range of things that are needed.
Yeah, that's awesome. Paul, examples of government industry collaboration?
Yep. Yep. Well, I mean, to start with, a big thanks to Sustainability Victoria on my journey, for starters. About 4 years ago when we started, questioning the impact of our own work is when I reached out to the guys at Sustainability Victoria and invited them in to give examples and to give us, to talk through the programs. And also then, examples with some of the work that we do with universities. Some of the accelerator programs that are going through that, in terms of digital acceleration for the circular economy, really bringing together industry who can be, I suppose, the catalyst for piloting or for testing a lot of these new ideas. And of course, the grant funding that can come in to help support that, but also bringing the various collaborators or the various stakeholders in to actually help guide those companies too, those startups that need business, they need, marketing, they need these other sorts of skill sets that they don't have to all come together to help launch and to help accelerate their advancement.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, Alicia.
Yeah, I love this question because I've had the pleasure and I think timing with that, although SV may have sort of transitioned to a different mode of delivery and support going forward, I do think from a textiles perspective, it was one of the first state policies that actually looked at prioritizing textiles alongside food and organics, as well as something else I can't remember, but no, I'm kidding. It was plastics. But textiles, we were just so overjoyed to see it. And of course, lots of people were influencing that. But I think, it does sort of legitimize sort of this is a thing that needs to be looked at. It's not a contaminant. It is actually piling up in landfill. And so we do need to take a look at it. There's lots of other materials. Of course, steel, plastic, food and organics are all important. But I think being prioritized and then a year later having a grant fund stream that was dedicated to it for SMEs or for large brands. And I think for me, having applied as a consultant with a colleague to really try to pitch to a large brand, which was Kathmandu, so different from an SME, but a large brand to trial a pilot that was 5,000 units of product that was maybe just needed a repair or a launder, but could go back out for resale. The grant, I think, did matter because it got us a little bit over the line. Of course, it was a really good, compelling story and it had been practiced overseas. And so we were trialing it here. But 5,000 units is not a small pilot. And a large organization like Kathmandu is not a small organization. And so the way that we had to design to implement that pilot was a lot of different interventions. And the group was amazing at internally working with their teams to figure out every change that each team needed to do. So I think you know, it does have an impact to have a grant. But yes, it's probably not the only mechanism, but really important. And that was just one of many amazing pilots that SV funded in the last few years. And I really think that that's catalyzed the conversation more from just advocacy and discussion about what's possible to really seeing it. And as a state government, I really cannot sing your praises enough for taking the leadership, because, you know, that then puts the federal government kind of in perspective as far as what are they going to offer. And of course, you know, they have done that in the last few years, but I think SV really led the way in so many ways. Great. Any panel that you need me on, I'm available. I can sing your praises, no problem. It has impact, which is really important. Yeah. And it's large scale impact, which does, you know, try to get us to bridge that valley of death where we don't see the scale. Because if we can dial up a little bit on scale, you just have so much more that you can see change.
So here in Australia, there's so many different ways that local, state and federal governments are helping shift the dial here. Grants, all sorts of different things. I just want to share a little story from, so I worked for 13 years in France, and that's where I cut my teeth on this stuff. And there were so many great examples of how the government worked a little bit differently to encourage this kind of collaboration. One was at the not-for-profit where I worked. We worked with all the different sort of funding mechanisms of government, but we'd actually find a circular service product, you know, whatever was happening, that innovation, you know, people come with a good idea, right? But then it's not all cooked either. So when you put out a grant and you wait for amazing stuff to come back, and we saw it in CBIC, right? Let's put out a really great, aim it high. We want the best reuse. Let's not talk about recycling, like really circular grant. But if you're not helping kind of develop those links and develop those sophisticated projects, they just don't drop out of thin air either. So in France, we were on the other end, actually really helping to, you know, you'd come to us and then we'd find some innovators to plug in with you and a researcher over here, and we'd help you kind of pre-cook your idea and then be able to pitch it to all the different grant fundings. And, you know, the EPA could kick in a couple of grand and SV could kick in a couple of more. So it was a way that you were actually helping that kind of pick. So you were doing some of that stuff as well. So that was a good way.
Amazing. Did you pre-cook? So last question, and no pressure, everyone, but this may be the thing that wakes people up tonight. 2030, we're in 2030. Tell us what 2030 looks like, assuming that we've now had 5 years of organisations, all businesses around Australia have been innovating for circularity. What's 2030 like, Gwyneth?
Yeah. And this is an interesting one because I was reflecting on this and I started my career in the energy and sector as well, and how far that transition's gone. So what does 10 years hence and what can we do faster? And I guess I was reflecting on, and it's been talked about a lot today, the emissions accounting and I started, you know, my career around carbon markets and those sorts of things. And it seems like it's been a hard, long slog. I guess for me in 2030, we can see it already happening in the background around biodiversity and how that for the circularity, that's regeneration to me. We can see nature-based financial disclosures already cropping up at a rate of knots much faster than carbon making its way through the system. And I think when we're sitting here in 2035, I guess what I suspect and I would like to think is happening is a lot of the conversations we're having now around material harvest value and emissions, we're having the same types of conversations around solutions for the regeneration pillar, how we have financial disclosure for biodiversity, how we have the right data, all those conversations we're having for the other two pillars right now, but we're not having that conversation for regeneration just yet. And that's, I think, the bit that's coming down the pipeline that I'm really keen to look back from 2035.
Awesome. Thank you. Paul.
Thank you. I think material data banks, I think uptake of material data banks, I think, you know, in terms of design, I think we're going to be starting off with data, then systems, then a design, and then the data. And I'll wind it up there.
I think there will be another shock like COVID. So I think there will be a sort of a short and sudden impact. And not that I would invite that, but I just think it's a reality of the next 5 to 10 years. But I'd like to think that then forces, like if there's supply chain disruptions and there's another shock like what we've seen, we will revalue what we already have here in Australia.
I just heard earlier Ainsley say that we've imported 1.4 billion garments last year, which we're now measuring, which 5 years ago we were measuring. So, you know, 1.4 billion garments could be recirculated to a population of 26 million, 20, whatever we are up to, under 30 million people, and people would still enjoy style and feel expression and feel like they have what they like in the world as far as their needs met, maybe some dopamine. So I feel like, you know, we really have the opportunity to get excited about what we already have and just revalue it. And I'd like to see that at scale, both from a brand and business perspective, what's the profitability of that opportunity, as well as, you know, citizen behavior, as well as governments expecting that that's the status quo.
Maintenance is really sexy.
Nice. Yeah. Great. And so thank you so much for all of your enthusiasm. There was loads and loads of questions I did not get to. Feel free to harass the panel as they run away. Thank you for your attention. And that's it from us. Watch Pitch Perfect.
Great moderation, Julie. Well done. End of the day.